Hi, this is Jerry from SharePoint. This episode has been recorded remotely and therefore may contain some technical glitches. We hope you'll bear with us. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Season 2 of SharePoint as we continue to tap into the craft beer scene. I'm Jerry Holla, your host. Welcome back for part 2 of our interview with Maureen O'Pray. Maureen is a noted historian who specializes in the history of the brewing industry in Maryland. She's the author of Brewing in Baltimore, Beer in Maryland, A History of Breweries Since Colonial Times, and co-narrated the documentary Brew More Baltimore. Let's listen in to part 2 of our interview with Maureen.
And now I'd be remiss if I didn't connect something a little more present and with your involvement. During that same conversation we alluded to earlier with Jim at the Brewers Association, he talked a lot about what BAM had done to help advocate for changes in Maryland legislature because our alcohol laws are quite antiquated. And so they talked about a lot of the things that they did on their end. And I know that you had worked with them because your primary job as public relations manager for Peter Franchot, the Maryland comptroller. So given that role, what can you share with us as far as laws that would remain now that we're shifting out of the pandemic and things returning to the new normal versus are there any of those laws that might go back to pre-COVID times?
Well, and that is the concern. They were able to, BAM, God bless them, and what an important, necessary organization. And I'll just say quickly before I kind of go into the law part, mm-hmm. every industry needs an association to help advocate for them. Every industry in Grow and Fortify does a great job on many fronts. So the Brewers Association, Distillers Guild, and the Wineries Association for Maryland, it is incredible. And they work so hard. They listen to their members. I can't say this enough. They listen to their members because not all associations do that.
True.
And they represent their best interests. And they worked very hard. Many of you know, Comptroller Franchot was very concerned about what was happening in the brewing industry. Mm-hmm. Our laws were, repeal era laws. It was crazy. And, you know, Governor Ritchie, God bless him, may he rest in peace, wanted to make life as comfortable for everybody coming out of Prohibition as he could, mm-hmm. and left it up to the jurisdictions and incorporated cities to decide how they were going to operate when alcohol was now mm-hmm. legal and Prohibition was repealed. But what that left was a mess.
Yeah.
It left a mess. And we've got the three-tier system on top of that. And, you know, these kinds of things combine to create a very complex, very difficult to navigate world. So if you want to be a brewer, if you open in Montgomery County versus Baltimore City, things are going to be very different. I mean, there's some things that are very clear, but mm-hmm. just, you know, where you open your brewery and what you want to do with that brewery mm-hmm. is it's going to change by jurisdiction. And, you know, that is difficult. So it's made it hard for many folks in Maryland. And the laws have been changed periodically. Houston had to get the law changed with Senator Della so he could open that first brew pub in the city of Baltimore, Sisson's, mm-hmm. right? So these things have happened over time. Before COVID in 2019, the Brewers Association did a great job and they got changes made to lift sales. How much beer you could sell from the tap room, how right. much you could self-distribute, that entire process. But also, one of the most debilitating things for brewers, it's just, you know, sometimes I still think of this and think it's just crazy that, you know, in what is supposed to be, you know, fair competition, capitalism, that we had this going on because it sounds very anti. which is once you sign a contract with a distributor, you can't get out of it. Right. Yes, technically, you can give them 30 days and say, you know, I want to get out because of this, but they don't have to let you out of the contract. Mm-hmm. And then in 30 days, you can try again. And it can be unending. And that was very hard, because if you ended up with a distributor that was not carrying your product or trying to sell your product in restaurants, and you know, if this distributor was the Eastern Shore or Montgomery County, because that's county controlled, but you know, Frederick or whatever region that you had signed on with this distributor for, and they're not putting your product out there, then what's happening? You're not selling your product in a market, but you still are stuck with this distributor. You can't switch. So the law allowed for a fair parting of ways with the breweries. They have to pay fair market value to the distributor, and then they're out of the contract. Okay, great. So we were making progress. When COVID hit, the comptroller said, you know what? He and Hogan, you know, are very simpatico on these, have been very simpatico on these things in the past, that the laws were too restrictive. All of these folks are going to go out of business if we don't do something. So suddenly, comptroller said, look, I want to suspend enforcement of many of the laws that are in place. So if you want to, you know, not have any limits on taproom sales right now during COVID, we're not going to do that. And then it just kind of continued on from there, those sorts of things, to home delivery. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have that before. So now we can have home delivery. And what does that look like? How does that happen? And what ended up happening, you know, Beer Me. Now there's a home delivery platform for beer in Maryland, which is great. So all that innovation shouldn't go away. All these things that changed to keep these breweries and distilleries and wineries open during COVID should not change. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely something that the comptroller has advocated for. It's definitely something that Governor Hogan was also in support of, and Brewers Association said, let's do this.
Right.
Let's put this legislation through in 2021. But like anything, not everybody has the same vision of what is best. And I say that, you know, we're all different people and we all have opinions. We all have thoughts, we all have beliefs. So, you know, not everybody in the legislature thought that might be the best plan. So coming out of COVID, let's leave some of these things in place and see how it goes. So many of the things that we saw during COVID, the delivery, why would you, know, you've got a whole new industry out of this that's hiring more people, that's, you know, paying more taxes to the state, which funds all kinds of things from hospitals to education to everything else. Why would you want to suddenly shortcut that revenue?
Mm-hmm.
That's bad for everybody in the state, whatever your feelings are about craft alcohol.
Right.
So it's got a sundown provision. So what that means is that the end of 2022, that will expire. So the question is, now what do we do? So many of these things that we had in place during COVID are going to stay in place. They're going to remain in place. And that's great. But by the end of 2022, something more permanent needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So fingers crossed. and I know that they'll advocate well for it, but it's also a demonstration. You know, we're coming out of COVID now. And in doing that, a lot of things are, we talked about reverting back to normal. I don't know that everything will ever be quite normal in that sense.
The new normal, yeah.
The new normal. But what we will see, you know, there's a lot that happened, whether it's, you know, giving a 90-day moratorium on, you know, sales and use tax and other business-related payments to help keep these folks going and alive, so that when COVID, you know, was done, they'd still have businesses and they could recover. And many of them did. So now what we're seeing is we're getting to the point where, you know, the moratoriums and the extensions and all of these other things are, you know, we're just about to hit that. From that point forward, we'll see what happens, but you know, it looks like as long as COVID holds and it stays in check, everything will be fairly back to normal, at least in the sense that it will continue to be a test case for how these laws are working outside of COVID. So how is it, you know, these self-delivery home delivery, increased tap room sales, those sorts of things. How are those working when we're not dealing with COVID? Are these, are the precautions being taken? Are there things that some of the folks were worried about? Is underage folks getting their hands on stuff? Well, if everybody continues to operate in the way that we're checking IDs and, we're going through all these protocols to make sure that those don't happen, then I don't see any reason why this wouldn't extend beyond the end of 2022. But I think it's getting the test case outside of COVID that is kind of what the settlement kind of got to. Let's see how it goes and then go from there.
I know that Jim had said he's like, you can't really put that genie back in the bottle once you've let it out. And hopefully, like you're saying, that's the case. Everyone has learned to adapt to those new guidelines and it becomes our new normal. And people go, why did we not do this before? And why would we take this away?
And even the mixed drinks. Oh, you can have dinner and your pina colada will go with you.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Getting delivered. But if you actually look at it, there was some kind of shift in that anyway. When you think of Drizzly, if anybody's familiar with that, before COVID hit, there was Drizzly that was delivering, it was picking it up and delivering it to you. So it was kind of already starting to happen in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But COVID really, this was about keeping people employed, keeping the lights on, keeping businesses open. And what these alcohol manufacturers do in every neighborhood that they go into and open, it is literally pouring money into that local economy. They're hiring locally, they're buying locally. It helps build up the infrastructure. So you've got more money going into schools, roads getting repaired, all of those things.
Right.
Good for communities. Why would you want to make it so that they can't operate?
Right.
Why would you want to do that?
Right.
You want to keep them open. You want to keep them in business. And now if they're flourishing because of the changes in the laws, don't take that away from them because it's good for the state.
Right.
And
right.
I know there are folks that will come back and say, well, we're worried about drinking. I understand.
Well, the Brewers Association already released numbers, fairly recently that despite what people thought, the increase of drinking there's no significant numbers and data to support the fact that people were drinking more now simply because they were at home. They just shifted from where they were drinking, from in breweries and restaurants to now at home. So it did that. So I definitely think there's that aspect that there's some data on that end to support. But one of the things you touched on right towards the end is something I've kind of always wondered, because I'm born and raised here in Maryland, and then I've moved to other places in my past life with coaching and seen places down south, Texas, where you have drive-through liquor stores, like you could drive your car into it and they'll put it in your car, or, Louisiana or Arkansas, where you have like a drive-through daiquiri stand where they're giving you, and I'm like, they're giving you alcohol and you're in a vehicle. How is that a good idea? And then we can't simply, deliver at home or that stuff. So that's always kind of baffled me. But this is the one. Okay, so we can now mail within the state of Maryland. Beers can be shipped within the state. Why can we not have alcohol shipped into the state? We can't get Trevor or Drizzly, some of these out of marketplaces, Adroit Theory, when we talked with Mark down there, they can't ship into Maryland, to your house. So why is it that exists, that now we can ship within the state, but we can't get shipments into the state from out of the state?
Well, if you recall, and this is a while back, this has been a battle that was going on, and it was first struck with the wine industry. If you remember direct shipping of wine, And Marylanders for Better Wine and Beer Laws has covered that well. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they've done a really great job of kind of laying it out. And it took a long time. It took a lot of tries to get through the legislature, being able to say, okay, I want to order a case of wine from Osprey's Dominion in the North Fork of Long Island. I don't have time to drive 13 hours or 9 hours, depending on traffic. and I want this Cabernet Franc. Yeah. So it took a long time before that became legal. And what was happening, unfortunately, for a lot of folks, you know, the wineries decided, you know what, the penalty is this. Maryland's really struggling to kind of, you know, do this. So we're just going to take the penalty. We're going to risk shipping to homes in Maryland. And if we get caught, we'll pay the penalty. It's not a big deal. But what they weren't paying was tax, Maryland state tax.
Mm-hmm.
So the argument is that let them ship as long as you pay tax and you verify ID and do all of that. So that eventually made it through for wine. So that's another hurdle that we're going to have to cross. If you're already producing in Maryland and you're sending to a Maryland resident, you're already going to be paying those taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's taken care of. And we're seeing, and this kind of crosses a couple of things. We're seeing changes in how we're addressing this issue. Because you're talking about getting beer from a Drake Theory, or you're talking about getting, maybe you want Hetty Topper shipped to you, not that they would, but they might. but there's gotta be a protocol or parameter set up. I mean, if you're going to get beer or wine coming from out of state, there's a distributor that's going to carry it across state lines. They've got all the right permits. They've got all of those things. Mm-hmm. And we can make sure that it's safe and it's good. And nobody's going to get poisoned, you know? Yeah. It's tracked to its source. So it seems pretty straightforward that we should be able to do that with breweries as well. But again, it's some of these things are in place because they want to make sure that when they're doing it, they do it right. So mm-hmm. nothing bad happens, right? So some brewery in wherever that might not really be a brewery that is following the protocols that they safety protocols and other things that they need sends you something and you get ill from it.
Right.
Right. What did we do to protect you in the state of Maryland? And isn't that our job?
Right. So. And that makes sense. And I get that, you know, but even let's just kind of sit breweries from other states shipping into our state aside, you know, places that are going to ship, you know, companies that do that, like Tavor and, you know, some of those other ones where I can't go online and find great craft beer, you know, out of state and have it sent to me because I live in Maryland. And right. I'm not really sure I can wrap my head around why can't we do that?
And I think it goes back to sometimes you've got folks that are at cross purposes for what they think is right and okay. And you've got to successfully argue to them how it is okay, it will be safe, and it will be okay because it's already happening with wine.
Right.
You should be able to follow a similar protocol. But as you probably know, the laws for wineries and distilleries are different from what you have for craft breweries.
Right.
So again, it's even though they're all craft alcohol, you've got different governing rules in the Code of Maryland. So how do we adjust that? I would argue this. I think making the case, yes, using wineries as an example, is fine. But I think also making the case through a trial run. Okay, you may not want to make this permanent legislation, but why not get it on the agenda? Why not give it a year? See how that goes. If all goes well, you know, they're paying their taxes. It's a product that's not going to be, you know, it is what it's supposed to be, right?
Right.
Packaging and all the other TTB requirements are there. So we know that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and what they're shipping into Maryland to its residents, you know, is everything they're purporting it to be. If we can do that and do a test case for a year or two, what's the issue? Maybe then we can make it permanent. And it's like anything. It's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slog. And you know, that everything did not go through at first with the laws when we were trying to change them a few years ago. But then the next year, many of them did. And you needed compromise. And I think that's the thing. I think sometimes you've got to be able to compromise. We'd all love to just say, this is crazy or this is ridiculous. Let's just do it this way. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but how many times And there'll always be examples where someone can say, yeah, we've done that before, where we've said, oh, it's crazy, it's ridiculous, let's just do it. And then there were problems because it wasn't tested, it wasn't planned out well enough. Mm-hmm. We've already got the test case with the wine. Although right. again, different craft alcohol, I think there's a way to do it. Yeah. But I think we've got to get through this test case right now through the end of 2022.
Right. Well, no, absolutely. Absolutely. We want to keep these things are in place, but I mean, not just testing it, like you're saying, and saying there's test models with wine and distilleries, but look at other states. I mean, there are plenty of other states that do it. My hope is that we would be communicating with other states that have been doing this for a very long time and say, what did you run into? You know, how did you potentially, you know, avert any pitfalls? I mean, I'm hoping we're having conversations with other people that are doing it instead of simply, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you're getting, from Henry Ford. Or my other favorite one is, well, that's the way we've always done it. And I'm like, oh, I hate that.
Yes.
And it almost feels like a lot of times that's what's going on here in Maryland with these laws. It's like, well, that's how we've always done it. So, you know.
Yeah. And I think you have a populace now, for whatever reason, you can attribute it to whatever you choose to attribute it to. But we have a populace in Maryland that is much more educated on what's going on. There's much more awareness that there are problems. I remember talking about that reform on tap initiative when it didn't go through right away in 2018. It went through in 20, you know, many of those changes went through in 2019 for the, you know, the distributors and, you know, those contracts. And,
right.
Raising the tap room limits and so forth. I remember talking to people about it and getting the, what do you mean? What do you mean they can't get out of contract? What do you mean there's a limit to, and then they have to buy it from the distributor to sell anymore in their tap room if they reach the, what do you mean? That's the, it's produced here. What do you mean? And that was the phrase, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. Because they were incredulous that this was something that was going on and they had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think as we're kind of, you know, test case after test case. Okay, we've got some laws shifted and now COVID, we've got all these things that, you know, started organically happening that created innovation, that created more access, that created more revenue. I mean, why do we still have revenue numbers where we did?
Mm-hmm.
It's because, you know, the sales really, really helped us. Sales right. really, really helped us. So even though businesses, many businesses were struggling. So when you kind of look at what has happened, it's one of those things where, what have people been doing during COVID? They've mm-hmm. been communicating. They've been doing a little more distantly, but, you know, I don't know what the numbers are for social media, but I can only imagine that that's increased a lot since COVID, you know, yeah. that what's going on social media and that the dissemination of information. I know I'm seeing a lot more information than I did 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I'm looking at this and saying, all right, well, word's getting spread and it's getting spread more and more and more. It's also obviously newsworthy because, hey, we're suspending enforcement efforts on all these things. So mm-hmm. we don't put these folks out of business. What suspending enforcement, what does that mean? And then a lot of people who are naturally curious
mm-hmm.
want to know more. And I think that's good. So I think our populace is more educated about what's going on with the craft alcohol industry in our state. And they're starting to see the limitations. And anybody like you that's gone, driven through the brew through in North Carolina or Texas or Louisiana or wherever they've gone, and they've seen the difference in the laws, come back and say, what do you mean I can't do that?
Right.
They're doing it there. Why can't we do it here? And again, each state is making its own decisions. So we just got to convince, we've got to have a stronger voice
mm-hmm.
coming to our elected representatives and saying, what are you going to do about this?
Okay.
That's the only way. And the Brewers Association is doing a really good job of that. But I think that people want to be more knowledgeable about it. If they care about it, they want to be more knowledgeable about it.
Right. That's well, good. And I think that's great. I mean, that's, Yet another reason to have you on and have you share your expertise and your knowledge and, you know, insight of things that people don't know that, okay, a lot of it's about awareness. This is going to help as far as spreading awareness about it so that we can ask the right questions and hopefully get people thinking about things that they weren't aware of. And maybe we can continue to have some things change and in some respect, feel like we're catching up to other states in the country with what we're allowing our craft industry to do.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's like anything. Will anybody ever be truly satisfied?
No, but we'd like to get a little closer to modern times versus, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think there's a long way for us to go. And if you ever pay attention to the Brewers Association of America, they do an annual report where they talk about the number of barrels and the beer consumed per capita and, you know, where each state ranks. We're always down here. And it's because we can have a lot more breweries. You know, I'm not saying we need a brewery on every corner. We had that in Baltimore prior to Prohibition. There was a consolidation. I don't know that we need that per se. I'm not saying we don't. it comes down to the quality, right? Breweries will last as long as they're making good beer, good quality beer, especially now that we've got more of them. But there's definitely, when you look at those Brewers Association numbers, there is room for us to improve. There is so much room for us to improve. And now there's so many more people that want to get involved. There's so many more people, minorities, women. Yeah, we're there and we're getting there. But I think in part of making more opportunity for that, I think some of these changes in laws might actually help. Because it'll be a more attractive place to open a brewery, open a distillery. I'll never forget, I was giving a chat I was a panelist. Towson, the Regional Economic Studies Institute, a few years ago, this was a while back, I think it was 2016 or 2017 now. And I remember a gentleman from the National Beer, Wine, Wholesalers Association was on giving a speech. And these are all college kids with all kinds of ideas, still trying to figure out what they're going to do for a career, what industries are starting to boom and so forth. And I'll never forget, and this is just, it's almost like it was yesterday. And I'll never forget, he said, this is not, women aren't coming into this industry. Women are not coming into the brewing, they're not going to be. So any thoughts of this is women are going to start really proliferating in this industry, it's not going to happen. And that's a summation of his words, not the exact quote, but you get the gist. And I thought to myself, oh no. And as soon as I got the microphone, the first thing I said was, don't listen to that. Don't listen to that at all. You can do whatever you want. You want to be a brewer, you want to own a brewery, you do it. You can do it. And it's the same thing with these laws. It's the same thing with the number of breweries, and it's the same thing that we're talking about on all these levels. If you open the door, there is opportunity. We make opportunity for ourselves. The door is open. Does it need to open a little further? Oh, absolutely. I think it does. But there's room for growth. There's absolutely room for growth in our state. I think some of these crazy laws and jurisdictional changes, county by county and so forth, it makes it a little daunting for some folks, where other states, it's just all across the board. You're getting the same thing as opposed to one thing in St. Mary's County, one thing in Montgomery. But I think that it would be a more welcoming place for more brewers, for more distillers, for more vintners. I think it would be a more welcoming place if we could straighten some of this out and make it user friendly. And I think that would also add to more diversity. And I think you'd see a lot more gender diversity, a lot more racial diversity in the industry. But we've got to continue to open those doors.
Right. No, I think that's a great point. That's a great point. Well, where can people find you online? Website, social media, how can they connect with you?
So on Facebook, I'm at BrewBalt, and that's tied to the Instagram and Twitter. So it's Brewing in Baltimore. It's easy to find me. And my website is brewedinmaryland.com.
Okay. Well, great. Well, we'll put that on our show notes and on our website at sharepintpodcast.com. We've learned about your work. Let's get to know you a little better, Maureen. We have a segment called Straight from the Tap. It's a series of rapid fire questions. You can expand on them if you want. Otherwise, I'll just fire away. So if you're up for it.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. Straight from the tap. What's your favorite style of beer?
Ooh. I'm food and mood. It's really hard to answer because I'm food and mood. Sometimes I'm just in the mood for a particular style and often try to match it with food. So at this particular moment, because I'm not eating anything, it would probably be mood. And right now I could use a nice Czech Pilsner.
Okay. Great. What style do you wish more people appreciated, drank, or brewed?
So I am a big fan of mild month. May is mild month, and it is really hard to make a really good quality low alcohol beer. You can't hide flaws. And I would really like to see more folks in America really partaking of the milds, because I think you can get some really beautiful nuances of flavor in well-crafted milds that you can miss in some of the other styles and other high alcohol beers. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's great. Who are one or two of your biggest influences?
As in people or events?
Whichever way you want to go with it.
I will say that I find a lot of inspiration in folks like Judy Neff, and other women in the industry. It is inspiring to me because they have, you know, I've been doing the history for a while, and I've seen a lot more women come in since I've started doing Maryland beer history and researching and sharing it. And I'm very inspired by how women have come in undaunted, despite all the challenges, despite all the things they might face. I am completely inspired by these folks, by these women. And I've got to say, Judy's definitely, she's obviously, I love doing collaborations with her, but she's very inspiring because she's no bones about it. She knows what she's doing, and she is undaunted. And that's what you need. That's what you need in the industry. And we need more. We need more folks like that. So
no, that's awesome. That's awesome. And she's great. Okay. Most memorable place you've ever had a beer.
Oh, I want to say, sitting, on the patio, on the edge of, the deck, on the edge of Nick's Crab House, waiting in, you know, because I wanted crabs so bad. It's like 100 degree heat. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know if I can drink a beer in this heat. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know what? The heat went away. And the beer was one of those times I was waiting for people that I hadn't seen in probably 5 or 7 years and wanted to take them to crabs in Maryland. You know, mm-hmm. Not everybody understands the crab experience in Maryland. And for first time folks, it's definitely an event.
Yes.
And I remember sitting there waiting for them and thinking, wow, this is, it's really hot. Maybe I didn't make the right choice. And then I think it was a union. And I'm sitting there drinking. I'm like, oh no, everything is as it should be. And as I'm enjoying that, it kind of all coalesced. It was like that kismet moment where everybody that I was waiting for to get there so that we could eat crabs showed up. The wait no longer mattered. Somebody abandoned a table and our number got called, and they had larges that day, and the sun was setting and the breeze came in. So 100 degrees didn't matter. The beer was perfect and the company was sublime and the crabs were ideal. And it was like, you know what? That's one of those moments that if you can take it and encapsulate it and just hold on to it, you know that everything is always going to be just fine.
Absolutely. A moment frozen in time. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. All right. Well, this next one is going to be good, particularly with your background and as a beer historian. I'm excited to see where you go with this question.
Okay.
What person, living or dead, would you most like to share a pint with? And what would it be a pint of?
I think that would be pretty easy. I would most like to share a pint with George Bowerschmidt. And it would be a pint of his Pilsner. And his story, his family's legacy, to me, is one that is so amazing. And it is the tale of overcoming from, you know, living in the basement with the farm animals to coming to America and being one of the most successful brewery owners in the state, and having this brilliant, beautiful family, and all the things that he dreamed of, understanding getting from there to where you always wanted to be. And I would love to sit and have a pint of his Pilsner with him and listen to him talk about that journey. My German's not so great, but I'd work it out.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, that would be fantastic. Okay, last one. When COVID is over and travel is safe again, where are you most looking forward to drinking a beer?
Well, Scotland. My husband and I were supposed to go April of 2020. And obviously that didn't happen because of COVID. So at some point we're going to get there. And I'm really looking forward to that. In the meantime, though, I've got to say, anytime I can get to a local brewery and see my friends and be able to hug them again.
Yes.
That's the hardest part because, you know, it's really hard. Yeah. It's really hard. But being able to share a pint and give them a hug, I don't care.
Yeah.
Any brewery, no. You name it, and I'm going to be happy.
That's awesome. No, that's great. That's great. Well done. Let's shift back to your work with Maryland's beer history. And what projects are you currently working on that we should look for in the coming months?
Well, I mentioned Pernicious Mary, which is great. One other, Admiral Buck. It's another historical collaboration. Tobacco Barn Distillery, which is down in Hollywood, Maryland. So it's in Southern Maryland. And they have, Scott is fantastic. He owns the distillery and he is a retired admiral. So that's where you're getting Admiral from. And a Bock beer, it's Edward Stifel. And Stifel had a brewery in Baltimore. It was, he had one in Federal Hill and then he sold it. And there was a lot of, political violence with the Know Nothing Party that chased him out of the area. And so he went up to Frederick Road, and so this is a little more on the western side of Baltimore, and opened Carrollton Brewery. And he was known for making Buck beer, which you and I would say is a Bock beer, which just the name itself has an interesting history because there's so many incarnations of Buck, whether it's the brewer getting knocked over by a buck that was outside of the brewery, and he lost the contest for who had the best Bock beer, or the, you know, interchangeable Buck and Bock. So we're making this Bock style beer after Edward Stifel, but it's going to be an imperial Bock because we're aging it in a Tobacco Barn Distillery cask.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and we're doing two incarnations. One is the rum, that Tobacco Barn aged rum on the USS Constellation in Baltimore. I don't know if you know that, but the rocking of the ship on the water actually forced the rum into the wood. And that's what helps age it and take on those beautiful notes. So the barrels have come off of the Constellation. Okay. And they've been emptied, they've been bottled. So some of the Buck beer is going to be put in Constellation barrels, and that's going to be a proceeds help go fund the Constellation and the constant upkeep, maintenance, and restoration. But then another one we're going to do is going to come off of a bourbon barrel that's going to be flown at 700 miles per hour in a Marine Harrier jet.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's going to be in August is when it's going to fly. And it's kind of the same premise. The bourbon is going to be kind of forced into the wood from the flight because it's in an external fuel tank on the Marine Harrier jet. And so once that process is over, we should be getting one of those barrels to also make the Buck beer. And so Admiral Buck, a couple different versions of it, but I'm very excited. And Scott is a great guy. So if you're interested, it's fantastic bourbon. I mean, fantastic bourbon. And it is a true bourbon distillery instead of a distiller that sometimes makes bourbon. It's actually purposefully made from the 51% corn, all those other things. It is a true bourbon distillery. So very excited. So it's kind of a tri-collab.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited about that. And those are the two main ones we've got going on right now.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. Is there anything else that you'd like our audience to know that we haven't covered?
I don't know. It's hard. But you know, hey, you have a million things going on in your head about what you'd love to share, but I think we've hit the really important stuff. And I'll always say this. If you love your craft beer, you love your craft spirits, you love your craft wine from Maryland, advocate for them. Always advocate for them. It is important. I know everybody has their priorities in whatever, whenever they choose elected officials and so forth, and that's fine. But always ask them what their stance is on it. So, you know, and don't be afraid of a conversation. Oh, I'm not supporting that. Oh, how come? What are your thoughts on that? It's okay to talk to people. I find that people get a little fearful. Just ask questions. Ask questions, ask them why they support or don't support something, and see if you can have a conversation. And it's like anything, even if it's something unrelated to the craft alcohol industry, whatever it may be, open up a dialogue, be kind, be respectful, and find stuff out, because that's the only way you affect change. And that's the only way you learn what's really going on, is ask those questions. So listen and talk.
I think that's great advice. And also your earlier advice about making sure that you treat everyone that you walk into a brewery, distillery, cidery, meadery, whoever, walk in there, regardless of race, gender, creed, treat everybody with respect, and know that they're experts, they're there for a reason, and just be kind to people.
It's not as hard as it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll remind everybody again where they can connect with you online.
Sure. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, it is Brewing in Baltimore at BrewBalt. And my website is brewedinmaryland.com.
Sounds great. Well, again, we'll put that up on our website at sharepintpodcast.com. Well, Maureen, I want to thank you for your time today. And I look forward to a time in the near future when we can share a pint in person.
Absolutely. 100%. I can't wait.
Oh, that's great. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jerry.
Share a Pint is released biweekly on Friday mornings and can be found at sharepintpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at share_pint. And like, share, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. SharePint is now a proud member of the Hopped Up Network. Enjoy the show and would like to contribute? Consider leaving a PayPal tip. You can do so at the PayPal button on our website at sharepintpodcast.com, or search for us on PayPal at jerry@sharepintpodcast.com. SharePint is made possible by help from the Community Media Center of Carroll County. Music for the show, Groundwork, provided by Kevin McLeod, and can be found online at incompetech.com. Associated with the craft beer industry and have an interesting story you'd like to share on a future episode? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at sharepintpodcast.com or email us at jerry@sharepintpodcast.com. Until the next time we share a pint, I'm Jerry Hullough. Prost.